we have trouble with. I think we'll be small because people will have family. Lots of people have family commitments today. And
Right.
small is beautiful.
Yeah, I'm gonna Reagan, I'm gonna make you co-host. Oh, I can't because I've given away my authority.
Oh,
So
I can make him co-host, but I'm not sure what we would need it for.
just in case something happens to you.
Okay, if I, Regan?
A lot of pressure.
Yeah, well, let's see, how do I make you a co-host?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, under more. Make co-host. Ta-da. Okay, so if I drop dead, you're
I'll take it. I'll take us home.
it.
Sorry, you're in already.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And just so that, just in case any of you were wondering, you see that little spelling of Regan Arnson's name? If you just consider that, you can look at it and divide it into syllables, and it says Regan. So just in case you were wondering, that's his name. Regan. You might think I was a teacher or something. Taught a lot of kids to read. Okay. Lovely. Sweet to see you all on a really nice afternoon. I haven't gotten out too much myself today, but tomorrow's going to be quite warm and I'll get a long hike in then. And that breeze just feels like, I don't know, it's sort of, when you in February you start to get these little glimmerings of spring, even though you're right in the midst of winter. There'll be just something about the movement of the air that goes, And today feels like one of those. When the rivers might be starting to think about cracking a little bit. And I tried an experiment this morning of starting bougainvillea from a stick. And at this time of winter, it always feels like you want to do that, right? Or you'll notice that your onions are starting to sprout in the refrigerator, and you want to stick them in a little dish and let them have a try at it. Because clearly they want to, even though it's early yet. And my very little granddaughter was on the Zoom chattering away and sitting up independently, and somehow that feels like spring too. It's like, already? Look at her, Look at her go. So I think I'm going to consider us assembled, and It's so great to see you all who have persisted in hanging out with this material. And I've really been, especially in this last section, feeling the kind of cyclical nature of it, the way it just keeps sort of circling around, coming from a slightly different, or almost like a layering. It almost feels like, I don't know, making paper when if you're sort of putting in things and layering things, except that it's in motion. I'm not sure I have the right images for it, but in a way, I feel that this book that in wanting to, you know, F the ineffable for us, in wanting to bring a kind of language to it, bring forth an ancient way of languaging to us, and to do it in English, Hinton, it feels as if he's sort of taken his past work and brought it to a place where he's brave enough to try to say something. And he has to layer it. You know, he has to do, sort of put this little glob on and sort of work that in, and then add another little glob and work that in. And so it progresses, but that doesn't make it easy to absorb necessarily. But it feels as if it's the structure that was necessary for him in order to do it. And I'm finding myself wanting to respect his effort, even though I sometimes feel a little bit irritated with him. And I'm not sure why. It's like I feel this little unkindness coming up in myself towards him. And when I look at it, it feels like, and I think I've said a little bit about this before, it sort of feels like he's wanting to talk about dark enigma as, in a way, feminine principle, but without any reference to anything feminine at all, as if that would be irrelevant. And it just pisses me off. So I noticed that it really hits a nerve for me. And I'm curious about that and wanting to explore it some more, even, you know, after we're done. What is that nerve? And is there something there? Or is it, you know, cultural in me? As of course he's in the culture that he's in. And so I'm thinking maybe next week, this week I'd like to meander through the material and really try to stay really close to it, so that we can continue to, you know, receive this kind of infusion of words that are meant to undo themselves. And then next week in our last session, to do a little bit more of the sort of discussion of, well, what do we, where would we like to take this? You know, if the course of the history of Chan is to include again and again the need to remedy the antidote, then all right, then us, how are we going to contribute to that project? You know, it's fair, you know, Hinton having really given it, you just get the feeling he's given it his all in this book. He's really gone for it. Then how do we receive that gift and take it another step? So you might sort of, I should have said this at the end instead of at the beginning. You might want to sort of muse on that a little bit over this next week. And for now, let's steep in it And I've been noticing that the kind of stresses of the time, even though there's some stresses that have been relieved, I don't know about you, but I know a lot of people who are sick. You know, one person who went into the ER yesterday, one who went in today, and it's like, whew, this kind of unrelenting pace of difficulties for people I care about this winter. Although my sister-in-law is in rehab, which is really kind of wonderful, no longer in the ICU, but facing, you know, facing the task of a very long recovery. Anyway, so there's all of that, and then there's just all of this beauty. There's this burst of creative energy in the world that you can just feel and that you know that you're part of. So there's just so much muchness, you know, of all kinds right now, that I thought today, if we can just kind of do a Whitman, you know, if we can just relax and take our ease and kind of lie down in the grass with this stuff and enjoy ourselves, that's my goal. So I'm going to begin with this poem by my new favorite poet. You've heard me mention Kai Miller from his book, The Cartographer Tries to Map a Way to Zion. Just the title, you know, just the title's kind of delicious. And, you know, it could be a review of Hinton's book in a way. It's like, don't you love it when two things put themselves together like that? So here's the beginning poem of, almost the first one. I might have to read you the first one and the second and third. It won't take very long. From The Cartographer Tries to Map a Way to Zion. And so we're going to meditate in the middle. We will be meditating. And so let yourself just sort of sit in meditative space while you hear these. My sense of them is, is that Kai Miller is languaging in the way that we're experimenting with languaging. A very, very loose weave. And some of you may remember earlier Hinton books in which he imagined a woman poet writing on silk, which then unraveled as it went out into the wind. And this poem feels a little bit like that to me, especially the second one. But this first one's called Groundation. And if you just take it in physically as a visceralization, do that with it. So begin this thing with an abuye, 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 a heart bless. Step out from the case of your sandals, stand shoeless. Allow your knees and then your forehead and intimacy with stone. Know your ground. The emperor that landed here in 1966, I think that's Haile Selassie he's talking about, was led down his heights and gold and green plain by a Rastaman. And tell me, was it all for show, the way he scorned the red rolled out for him? He walked instead on common ground. The hem of Selassie's trousers brushed the dust of Babylon. Reach through history, touch this kneeling crowd. The tarmac soft against the substance of its faith. So that's the blessing with which she begins. Heart bless. And here's, this next one's called the shrug of Yah. In the long ago beginning, the world was unmapped. It was nothing really. Just a shrug of Yah. Something he hadn't thought all the way through. Our world was neither here nor there with him. And neither here nor there with itself. A world which did not know if it would stay or go. Know or go. If it would stay. Which did not know a world with itself. And neither here nor there with him. Our world was neither here nor there, something he hadn't thought all the way through, just a shrug of Yah. It was nothing really. The world was unmapped in the long ago beginning. Huh. And that poem is symmetrical around the word no. And then he goes on to establishing the meter. Like tailors who must know their clients' girths, two men set out to find the sprawling measure of the earth. They walked the curve from Rhodes to Barcelona and Barcelona to Dunkirk. Such a pilgrimage. They did not call it inches, miles, or chains. This distance, which as yet had no clear name. Between France and Spain, they dared to stretch uncalibrated measuring tapes, and foot by weary foot, they found a rhythm, the measure that exists in everything. Foot by weary foot, they found a rhythm, the measure that exists in everything. Shadowless beginnings and rhythm emerges, barely formed. to me, those poems feel like an evocation of the kind of ongoing, beginningless, and yet always beginning emergence from dark enigma, from who knows, where absence and presence give birth to each other. And that has its own rhythm. Meter. A kind of, I love that word because it's kind of a connection between measure and rhythm, measured rhythm. And we know from our heartbeats and from wind and water and things growing and things dying that when we listen, everything has rhythm. And it doesn't need to be defined, or luckily we mostly don't notice it. So then there's this little section from Ross Gay, from his Book of Delights. That feels sort of like a connection piece, connecting that to what do we think we're doing when we meditate. He says, I suspect it is simply a feature of being an adult, what I will call being grown or a grown person, to have endured some variety of thorough emotional turmoil, to have made your way to the brink and, if you're lucky, to have stepped back from it. If not permanently, then for some time or time to time. Then it is too a kind of grownness by which I see three squares of light on my wall, the shadow of a tree trembling in two of them, and hear the train going by, and feel no panic or despair, feel no sense of condemnation or doom or horrible alignment, but simply observe the signs, light and song, for what they are, light and song. And knowing what I have felt before and might feel again, feel a sense of relief, which is cousin to, or rather water to, delight. So I'll say a couple of things I love about that, and then I might read it into our meditation a bit also. It's not fancy language, which is kind of nice, isn't it? And yet there's a lot in it. One thing it reminded me of immediately is just, you know, 'tis a gift to be simple, right? Is a gift to be free. And he's really, you know, he's really expounding that in a way. But that it's not something to attain. There's no sort of stain, you know, crud of attainment in what he says. grownness happens to us in our lives. And to have endured some variety of thorough emotional turmoil, to have made your way to the brink, and if you're lucky, to have stepped back from it. Just a feature of being an adult. And yet you can practice it. So this is, you know, something that this often we feel as a tension in our way, tension between you already are awakened and, you know, you could use a little improvement, or, you know, you already are Buddha and this is how to become Buddha, you know. So there's a kind of interplay of those in our, that's built into our tradition. And this way of describing it as saying, then it is too a kind of grownness by which I see three squares of light on my wall. There's no stink of attainment to that at all, is there? It's just, yes, there's this experience also, maybe hard won through our suffering. And we can practice it. And this is what we practice, to just allow it, you know, to not need to get in its way. And a quote from our book later says, let your mind wander the pure and simple. Let your mind wander the pure and simple. And you can feel that in Ross Gay's words as well, I think. It's natural and it's practice. It's what we call meditation. And so I'd like to ring the bell a little bit and bring into our meditation, I think I'll bring this back a little bit later in the meditation, but I'll bring in a koan, the one that I sent you about this very mind, ordinary mind. And I'm going to read, it's interesting, sometimes Hinton's translations feel more different from our usual translations than this one does. When I sort of looked at them side by side, this time they didn't feel very different. So I'm not going to read two translations. I'm just going to stick with his. Except to say that Visitation Land is Jiaozhou and Wellspring South Mountain is Nanchuan. And okay, I have one more little digression there about the names. And we can come back to that probably later too. But I've been noticing that if I have to think about Visitation Land, then the language is more obtrusive to me, because I have to think about why is he Visitation Land and who gave him that name, and, you know, what's with that, and, you know, am I supposed to think of him as Visitation Land kind of thing? Whereas if I have Jiaozhou, to me that has this accretion of his teachings on it. It's like the things that he said, the encounters that he had are to me in a way most beautifully connected to just those sounds, Jiaozhou. And so rather than get sort of fundamentalist about words and names, it's fun to notice how they play with us and how we play with them, I guess. That's what I'm thinking. But I will agree to use the ones that Hinton has in here. So let's let's just relax ourselves into the meditation and know that it's just a time to just be us, sitting where we're sitting together with our different pictures and bookshelves making up a temple for us all. And this is it. This is what we got right now, huh? Let's have it.
Thank you.
Visitation asked, Wellspring South Mountain, what is way? Ordinary mind is way, answered Master Wellspring. Still, it's something I can set out toward, isn't it? I sure notice my mind taking that turn sometimes. Ordinary mind is way. Still, it's something I can set out toward, isn't it? There's this underlying move that happens so fast we don't notice it. It says, but, well, this isn't it. Something I can set out toward, isn't it? There must be something I can do about this life. This mind. Master Wellspring says, to set out is to be distant from. Right now, if I'm sitting here, when I'm sitting here, I am sitting here. If I set out, I'm already leaving. And I've set up someplace I'm far from. Then what am I doing if I'm not setting out? What about my energy? What about the chi? What about what I am? What's it doing? What is this mind when it's not setting out? Land says, but if I don't set out, How will I arrive at an understanding of way? If I don't set out, how will I arrive? How will I arrive at an understanding of way? Wellspring says, if you truly comprehend this way that never sets out for somewhere else, this way that never sets out for somewhere else, if you enter into it absolutely, enter here. Simply enter here. Leaving nothing outside. You realize it's exactly like the vast expanses of the universe. All of this. It's just all of this. This way that never sets out for somewhere else. If you just enter it, it's just all of this vast. All generative emptiness you can see through into boundless clarity. Now, how can you force that into coherence with the logic of yes, this, no, that? Dark enigma, already containing within the endless indivisibility of absence and presence. Generating this ongoingness, this here, this on and on and on. How can you force that into coherence with the logic of yes, this, no, that? Just here. The rhythms of your own breath and heartbeat, the surging of tiny beings through your body, the way that your skin breathes. And gives off some of you to the air. The way that your mind holds the coming and going of many thoughts. Just as the light is bright 1 second and shadowed the next. There are no walls. There are no beginnings and endings. So, wiggle around a bit if you want. Have a drink of water. Let your foot wake up, in my case. And in introductions to meditation, people always say, "But my foot went to sleep," and I'd say, "I'm sorry, I've been doing this for 40 years and my foot still goes to sleep. I can't guarantee you that will stop." Doesn't seem to have killed me yet. So I'll try to not too abruptly do this, but I would like to do some walking through the reading now. My hope is that your meditation continues to flow through as I lift up pieces of Hinton's writing. I forgot to ask if you're all hearing me clearly, because was it okay? I don't speak too loudly when we're in meditation, but I think my sound is doing better these days. Okay. All right. So folding back just a wee bit. To the end of the towards the end of the last section, I wanted to just light up that part about dark enigma being existence tissue as it is in and of itself before any names. So not being a nothingness, not being a void from which everything's going to magically appear, but more an ungraspableness of that we can, if we don't have to be aggressive towards it, if we can just allow it to be unexplained, you know, if we don't have to try to make it explain itself, explain yourself, then there's a way in which that becomes a resting place for us, for the mind. How restful for there to be a sense of it's funny, it's like a different sense of dark to me. It's not so much dark as opposed to light. It's just dark as opposed to what's under my feet that I can rely on, under my heart, that I rely on because I know that it is, that it encompasses all that is. I know that in the way of because it's me, right? Because it's what I'm made of. There's a kind of innate knowing that doesn't require me to figure it out or to understand about it. So in a way, that is kind of like a mother's lap or even a womb, where there's a sense of ultimate safety, of belonging there, of being made of this somehow, without having to remember it or know where it came from in some way, because I haven't come anywhere. I'm still here, because here is the thing that always is. And so if there was no bornness, I don't have to have a story about before I was born. And yet I can have this sense of dark enigma, of the mystery of which we're all made, us and everything, existence, tissue, as it is in and of itself, without my having a job about it. You know, what else is there that you don't have to do anything about? To me, there's something profoundly restful about that. And then if meditation is to blend your chi into the boundless, then to me that's what happens when I let go the reins, right? When I don't think I have to do something about it. Then my chi, which is present, you know, because it's present in all things, and I know, I feel it in me, and glory in it. And then I can let it blend into the boundlessness of this, of the room, you know. It's that, then I don't have to have some sense of my own chi, my own life juice, being separate from the life juice of everything else that's happening with me. And there's this profound relaxation that comes with that. It's like, it's okay. And it feels like maybe putting too many words on it, but it's okay no matter what happens in the next minute. It's okay that I know sufferings and disasters will continue in my life and in the lives of the people that I love, because it's just us doing this. Um, And so then we, again, to the language of the book, we follow occurrence appearing in things of itself. And again, as long as I don't think I have to, that I could be doing it wrong, or that I'm supposed to be doing it right, or that if I do it right, I will magically not be the same, you know, klutz that I am. If I don't have to leave those things, then I can follow occurrence appearing in things of itself. And that's a kind of play. And when the koans tell us that we can have a play of samadhi, they're talking about that, just sitting here, you know, right? It's like, you can just sit here and wow, what happens? Accept it, you know, and you don't have to. I love in one of these places in this section, the thing about you don't have to either welcome it or reject it. We tend to talk about welcoming, but there's this kind of more neutral stance towards things, which is just to allow them and not put up any barriers there. Follow occurrence appearing in things of itself. I can't remember the name of that Stacy and Who series that my daughter turned me on to, where there's this character that's always saying, "What's occurring?" He's this wonderful character in this story. What's occurring? And so it's like, you know, I sort of take on her persona when I want to knock myself off of my soapbox when I'm sitting. Just say, what's occurring? And don't let selfhood get in the way. It's his admonition. You could say that's a like, you know, here's a supposed to, but you could also say, yes, selfhood will be present. It doesn't need to be in your way. It's just another occurrence. Yeah. Your sense of selfhood is just another occurrence. It comes with the territory of being human. It's not a problem. You don't have to let it get in the way. So from another place, I wanted to sort of come back to this other note about meditation as a way to reduce things. In this chapter, he says it, meditation's a way to reduce things stimulating thought so we can see our original nature. So it's in a way, it's like just by sitting here and doing what we're talking about, allowing the play of things, allowing ourselves to join the play of occurrence. When we do that, because it feels like, he didn't say this, but it feels to me like because I'm not taking a stance of aggression towards my mind or anything else in the room, then things settle down. Things have a way of getting quieter and slower. And I'm putting myself in a situation where there's not much happening, right? The phone is turned off, you know, and I'm not trying to accomplish anything else. So I'm taking a little while to not have a job. And that allows things to slow down. And when they slow down, and the more we practice, the more they slow down, then we do allow ourselves the freedom to witness. It really takes a while to relax that much, you know? And so I think it's good to gift ourselves with enough time to get that deeply relaxed enough to witness occurrence and the gaps between the way occurrence emerges out of silence and stillness. And so what did he say on page 30 that I thought you might want to hear again? We with experience, the movement, with experience, the movement of thought during meditation slows enough that we notice each thought emerging from a kind of emptiness, evolving through its transformations, and finally disappearing back into that emptiness. And he's talking about how Taoism changed that sense of jhana. So it's not just trying to come to an empty state of non-dualist tranquility. It's just being able to slow down enough to witness. And, I think there's part of me that is dull, there are many parts of me that are dull, but one of them is this, there's always this talk about watching things emerge and develop and then disappear. I don't think that is actually so much my own experience. I just realized that's the sort of classic way of describing it. But to me, it's more just this constant morphing of things. So I'm not watching, I think, for beginnings and endings of things because I don't experience beginnings and endings of things. I just experience things morphing. You can see what it's like for you. Maybe you witness beginnings and endings of things. But it feels like if I'm watching for beginnings and endings of things, then I'm already manipulating what's happening. Does that make sense? Whatever. The stillness at the source and witnessing the stillness at the source of movement. To me, that's very real. And it's not a matter of sequence, time sequence. It's more if way is not someplace you're going, right? And someplace that things are going, and is instead all of this occurring in a sense of gestational time, time that's not linear, then the stillness at the source of movement is more like just feeling that the stillness is always present. And that movement comes and goes within it. It feels more like that to me. You might just notice what it feels like to you. And then what we're awakening, what is awakening is, seems like it's to move more and more freely in this territory, in this kind of being. Not so much the victim of the timeline or the measuring tape. Inner and outer moving as a single tissue, he says, inner and outer moving as a single tissue. That's real. At least it's coherent with my experience that when I relax enough, then I don't feel any walls of myself. It feels like we're all of this is happening together. And tissue of thought and perception, he says, inner and outer moving as a single tissue of thought and perception. So then what am I? Good question. And so then we're on to the next section called Sangha Case, talking about cons. And I like to think of cons as for instances. So if you take that public case as meaning a for instance, this is a case of that, then I don't know, that's how it feels to me. because they all just kind of say, well, what about this? You know? And that's what's delightful about them to me. And he says, and of course, meditation is Chan's primary means of understanding. It is Wu Wei plus Koans. Yeah. And in our way, that's so definitely true. And I think that we tend to say it, but we tend to give a certain amount of lip service to that. Say, oh yeah, that's the center of our, but is that really where we center our practice? I think it's easy to kind of slide off of it and go, other things are more entertaining. So just a cautionary note there. And Hinton says they're designed to move past the separations and then give us the experience of things as mystery. I thought that was interesting language, that koans are designed to move past the separations. So in this section, I made a note that I thought this section got really abstract, and that somebody had mentioned that they were finding it difficult. And I think it is. It's kind of abstract and it's kind of difficult. And I think everybody has trouble talking about what koans do. And that includes Hinton. He's just having trouble talking about what they do. And so you gotta, you know, give it to him for trying. Because really, what the heck does that mean? Designed to move past the separations. Well, I don't know what it means. He might, but he points out that Wu Wei, that, you know, absence action, so an action that sort of doesn't have a name, right? An action that just occurs out of, as part of this ongoing tissue, rather than a separation from it, is the guiding assumption of koan practice. So when we tend to get irritated with koan practice, I think often that's because we aren't actually willing to let ourselves get that loose. You know, the koans talk to us much more easily when we get really loose. Red Pine talks, or Bill Porter, when he was talking about the old guys, talks about, and maybe Hinton talks about it too, how, you know, they would like to drink some wine, partly because that started to make the borders fuzzy too. It has other problems, however. But I don't think it's to sneeze at, this sense that that koan practice relies on Wu Wei, on our willingness to let our activity be loose, be with, rather than within what's happening. So the response, he says, is Wu mind coming forth as words or action. And so does this mean just blurting things out? It's a little different than that, you know? And you kind of have to try blurting things out. You have to play quite a bit to get the feel of this. It's sort of like, you know, I never got to be a really good tennis player, but I sure remember learning to play tennis and loving it. And that sense that, that I just had to be really awkward at going after the ball for quite a while before I got to that place where I knew what the sweet spot felt like on the racket, you know, and what a beautiful feeling that loose and yet accurate swing was. And it's a little bit like that, you know, you gotta be, you kind of gotta be willing to do a lot of klutzy coming forth, and not even see it as klutzy. It's just, oh, okay, this is what it's like right now. Woohoo! You know, that was weird. And, you know, they will continue to be kind of weird forever in your koan practice. And that's what they're good at. And so getting used to being, doing embarrassing stuff helps. And that carries over into your life. You know, if you want to actually be helpful to anybody, you kind of have to get used to doing embarrassing stuff. You know, if you've raised a dog or a child, you know, you think about how many times you had to do embarrassing stuff. And so this is like that too. Enacting awakening. Linji says, grasp things and use them, but without names arising, that's dark enigma. Work with them. Let them work with you. Go for it. Feel the feel of that tennis racket when your grip is just right. Why not? And he goes on, not Linji, but Hinton, when you are absence's own doing, there's nothing you don't do. Here we are in human form, wandering the one chi that breathes through heaven and earth. That's us. That's us all the time, right? That's us when we're feeling crabby about stuff. That's us when we are feeling touched and lovey-dovey. It's us when we're crying, and it's us when we're raging. It's us all the time. It's what we are. In human form, wandering the one chi that breathes through heaven and earth. So one more chapter here. Are you hanging in there? Okay. Unborn. So he points out it isn't easy to experience ourselves as integral to that process. And I thought about, you know, the Pong family, maybe it isn't easy, but it isn't necessarily hard either. It might be, you know, neither easy nor hard. You know, it's there on the tip of every grass blade. But we do have resistance to it, because we don't want to die. And when we actually allow ourselves to experience ourselves as integral to that process, then we are experiencing death every moment. We're releasing at every moment. We're not holding on. And so that's kind of scary sometimes. The 10,000 things are not born out of absence. They're never separate from absence. And so that's the central understanding that Hinton presents for why say unborn? because we're not born out of absence, because we never leave it, right? It is us all the time. We are it all the time, as emerging as presence and and morphing, not even emerging, you know, because at the same time that we are completely ourselves and separate, you know, that at the same time we are completely not separate and completely not a real self that we think we are. So so he's pointing to the never separate part, right? I mean, you know, you are held inside of a skin bag and all of that, but in our ongoingness, we're never separate from the absence aspect of ourselves. So then Ma, he has these wonderful quotes from, what does he call him? You know, horse, great master Ma, the inner pattern and this world it shapes, they move unhindered. And so it is that everything born is unborn. That one just gives me chicken skin. I'm going to say it again. The inner pattern and this world it shapes, they move unhindered. And so it is that everything born is unborn. It's not a stopping and a starting. It's continuous. Yeah. What goes on is continuous. Not born, or the other translation, absence born. Never out of absence's generative process. So there again, there's that reminder. It's so easy to think of absence as a thing. And this is undoing that little knot again. Yeah, that we are never out of absence's generative process. So if we think of absence as an ongoingness rather than as a thing, you know, I just caught myself making it static, you know, making it a place somehow. Nope. A quality, more like a quality of what is. A quality of me is absence. A quality of me is presence. There's the absence nature of me and the presence nature of me. So if your mind is unborn and thoughts arise, it's sujan, not illusion. So if your mind is just the ongoing process, right? Is just your particular instance of the ongoing process, then it doesn't actually even make that much sense to call that illusion. It's just what's happening at that moment. So he says, we know our unborn nature directly in meditation. For in empty mind, one belongs without any separation to the absence tissue. You're just with it. You're just being it as it's being. And so you can tell that you're unborn because you don't see any beginning or end, do you? And yet you think you have to create a sense of a beginning or end, but your actual experience is of ongoingness. We move as integral to generative absence. There's another Ma section. I'm starting to feel like this is a lot. And so my next note, there was a Ma section, but my next note says, okay, he says, meaning is the cosmos orienting itself. not a separate realm. And at that point, I heard Red Pine saying, have a cup of tea, taste the tea. You know, it's kind of like enough already. So I think I'm at the place of enough already, and you may be also. And so I have a little reading to take into some meditation, and let's do a little more meditation. So I'll just take us into it with this one other quote. And that will be all the explication de texte. When I was in high school French, we did a lot of explication de texte. And I appreciate it. You know, learning to do a close reading is something I'm grateful for. Okay. Oh, don't you love how the bell is just a, for instance, you know, you can talk about it all you like, and then there's the bell. Thank you. It is like a jewel having light or a sound having an echo. From birth to death, you lack nothing and have nothing in excess. With such a birth and death, though you are born, your birth has no beginning. Though you die, your death leaves no traces. It is like waves rising and falling on the ocean and leaving no traces. Even though the waves disappear, they don't go to any particular place. Because the ocean is what it is, large or small waves appear and disappear. Your own mind is the same. It moves without ever stopping, and therefore appears as skin, flesh, bones, and marrow. It functions as the four great elements and five aggregates. It also appears in the form of peach blossoms and verdant bamboo. It realizes enlightenment in the form of acquiring the way and enlightening the mind. It divides into sounds and forms. Functions as wearing clothes and eating food and speech and action. It is nevertheless not separated itself, appearing and appearing. It is not limited by physical characteristics. Great Master Ma said, "No sentient being for countless eons has ever left the samadhi of Dharma nature. In the samadhi of Dharma nature, they wear clothes and eat food. Talk together and reply. The functioning of the six senses and the carrying out of activities is nothing but Dharma nature. Whether you say Dharma nature or sentient beings, it's the same as saying water and waves. One more poem. And this one's from, I forget who. Returning late. Past midnight, eluding tigers on the road, I return home in mountain darkness. Family asleep inside. I watch the northern dipper drift low to the river, and Venus lofting huge into empty space, radiant. Holding a candle in the courtyard, I call for more light. A gibbon in the gorge, startled, shrieks once. Old and tired, my hair white, I dance and sing out, goosefoot cane, no sleep, catch me if you can. That's Dufu, I think. Have a little bit more time, and I bet I'm in the dark. I'm not seeing myself, but I can tell it's getting dark in here, so I'll turn a light on while you take a minute. And I think we could have a little bit of sort of slow conversation and take it easy. And and maybe if somebody who isn't usually the first person to speak, or even the second person, might like to speak first, that will help us stay slow. Anyone have a question or an observation that's floating up? Yes. Wanda.